Welcome, baseball fans, to episode 52 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, at NatsGM.com on Twitter and the Baron of all baseball podcasts. Before we dive into the show this week, one quick item of business, if I might. The Nats GM Show is looking for a sponsor or sponsors, so if you or anyone you know would be interested in sponsoring the show and reaching between 2,000 and 3,000 listeners every week, we would greatly appreciate the support. If you're interested, go to NatsGM.com for details.
This is Jason Parks from Baseball Prospectus, and you're listening to the Nats GM Show.
And now, without further ado, I am honored and privileged to welcome back to the show my friend, Baseball Prospectus writer, and the man that I think knows more about hitting than anybody I know, Ryan Parker. Ryan, welcome back to the show, bud.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. Always good times we had talking on here.
Well, I'm very, very happy to have you back on the show to talk a little hitting today. And first place I want to start is you've got a new gig since you've been on the show. You're now working in Texas, so how about you give a plug for where you're teaching kids now?
Hey, so if you're ever down in suburban Dallas, head on over to Prosper, Texas. Place I'm working at now is called Collin County Baseball Academy, like 8,000 square feet right across from the school that Matt Carpenter's dad coaches at. Pretty good setup there, so you ever want to come down, check us out. I'll be happy to talk with you and probably hop in a cage and throw you some batting practice.
Does Matt Carpenter ever come by to hit?
He is not. I think he'll probably come down there, you know, see the family a little bit. But, you know, he comes in a cage not going to do anything to that swing, except just kind of stare and have my jaw on the floor.
Right, exactly. 28 home runs from a middle infielder, exactly, yeah.
Right.
So, well, I've got you on this week, first and foremost, because you were just came back from the World Woodbat tournament down in Jupiter. Probably the most prestigious high school event, certainly in the fall calendar. And I just wanted to get your thoughts a little bit on the entire production, what happened with you, and kind of just cover that a little bit this week.
So I got to give a plug to the organization that was nice enough to bring me down with them. This is an organization run out of Boston called NEB for Northeast Baseball. They brought myself and a pitching coach named Matt Blake, just brought us down to help them out for the week, trying to help out their guys with just some minor adjustments because they're going to be facing probably the best amateur competition on the planet. So I've got to give them a shout-out. But the week itself was unlike anything I've ever been around baseball-wise. Probably the crazy thing was the week started off with not even the high school kids, but there was a Cuban pitcher pitching in the main stadium, so the event held at the Cardinals and Marlins spring training complex. Most of the games go on kind of on the backfield. The first day, this Cuban pitcher, and I cannot remember his name for the life of me, pitched two innings at the main field against some team that was, you know, unlucky enough to ask, oh yeah, sure, we'll scrimmage, you know, try and hit this 24-year-old guy. And he came out there about 94 to 96, just dumping 88-mile-an-hour slider on these four. Carved him up and probably made himself tens of millions of dollars in those two innings, because he'll be just a typical free. So that guy, we started off as kind of an unknown commodity in the baseball world. And you can check all these updates. If you go to the perfect game log, if you look at the day one, they'll have his name in the video on it. So, but the week started off with the dude just landing himself, you know, a pretty good size paycheck.
So are there just 30 scouting directors sitting there and slobbering?
And there was everybody. If you get paid to even remotely think about baseball, you were probably there.
Very true. That is very true.
But just the environment. So the setup, like I said, that's just Marlins and Cardinals spring training complex. It literally feels like a carnival because it's loaded with people. They have like the apparel and equipment kind of stands all along the lined up along the main pathway. So you're getting, you know, Evo Shield stuff, Rawling stuff, like batting tees, radar guns, all this stuff kind of shoved in your face. On top of the carnival atmosphere, just adding to it, they literally have like the carnival food stands, so you can get, you know, like your giant lemonades and your like steak kebabs and stuff, which, you know, it's 90 degrees and humid, and people were still piling down fresh kebabs off the grill. That befuddled me.
Yeah, that sounds a little humid for a steak kebab, but okay, I'm with you.
Yeah. So, down there, there's about a 3-to-1 kind of person to golf cart ratio. there was, and you're just, you know, as the week goes on, you kind of get a sixth sense, just kind of check behind you, make sure you're not getting mowed down by a golf cart. They got places to go, and they're not stopping.
Were you big time enough to get a golf cart?
I was not big time enough to get a golf cart. I was hoofing it all week long.
Oh, so you at least got some exercise out of it.
Oh, yeah. but the level of competition was pretty unreal. I remember when I came up playing, if you were a pitcher who threw 90, that was, you know, you were something. I think the final number, there was 85 teams in the tournament, and ended up with over 200 pitchers throwing over 90.
Oh my gosh. That's ridiculous. Yeah. Wow.
And, I mean, velocity, you know, people get up in arms about the Tommy John stuff, but if you go out and throw 95 for one inning, you might have just gotten your college paid for, or you might be on your way to get some money in the draft.
So, yeah, and there's the conundrum that we run into, right? I mean, why wouldn't the kid then go throw his arm off in the fall when he should be slowing it down? Then again, like you say, this is an opportunity for him to be seen in front of every college coach and every scout in America, virtually.
It is, and it's the way that most teams, it was a very different tournament than most, because, you know, if most tournaments, you might throw your staff ace game one and try and rest them up for 2 or 3 days and then bring them back. And this tournament, what probably 90% of teams were doing was just throwing their guys for 2 or 3 innings at a time and just letting these kids air it out.
And now we're... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're good.
I'm curious where your thought is on how this is short-term and long-term for the game of baseball, both from the, you know, the scouting side of it and just what we're teaching these kids. If we're not teaching them to throw 5 and 6 innings and learn how to, you know, not rest their arm, but use their arm properly, and what we're doing to these kids, having them, you know, the biggest event on their calendar in some ways being in late October.
Well, I think it's just, you know, I'm definitely not qualified to kind of chime in on the health aspect of it. I think just on the baseball wise, what it's kind of doing is it's almost pushing the developmental kind of emphasis more towards the college and pro programs. Because in my hunch, you're going to get a lot of high school kids who can come in there and just blow smoke. But, you know, rather than, you know, guys who kind of have learned, not necessarily how to pitch, but, you know, they have an idea of the game and then they get to college, add some weight, you know, velocity comes along. It's almost inverted, but they've got the velocity and they've got, you know, maybe, you know, decent secondary pitch. But now they need to know how to harness 95 when they get to the collegiate level or they get to the pro ball. So it's just kind of, my view is it's just kind of shifting the emphasis on kind of the developmental curve of these kids.
Hmm. Interesting. That's a very, and how, what do you think from the hitting side? I mean, you work with the hitters more. Go ahead.
The hitters, man, this is a tough event for hitters. Because, again, you're seeing guys coming out there just giving you their best stuff. And you're not getting a chance to, you know, if you have a bad at bat against the guy, it's not like you're going to see him again. Like, oh, I've got a feel for this guy. Well, congratulations, you're never going to see him again. Because they brought out another guy who's going to give you a different look. So it was very tough for hitters. And that's, on the upshot, though, if you're able to, you know, to stick it at this tournament, that says something.
That's a good point. I would like to get your opinion on, are we pricing the middle class and the, you know, lesser class, goodness, the poor out of the game by having events like this and kind of the grandioseness of this tournament?
I definitely think, well, I think it's much easier if you have the money to, you know, not only have access to, you know, these kind of teams and the travel, but the training it takes a lot of these teams will bring in, you know, kind of bring in kids, and they'll cover their kind of tournament expenses and stuff, and be like, look, we can get you a hotel to, you know, reduce team rate. All right, like, let's, you know, we'll just try and help you out there. But it is very, it is tough because everybody, you know, everybody in the baseball world was at this tournament. It's just gotten to a point where you have to really focus. If my advice, if you, as a young player, or two young players, especially those who might not be in the best, you know, family financial situation, is worry about development first. Once, there is definitely a kind of a, you know, cost factor in this, but once you get, start getting better and better and teams, you know, want you to play for them, that's going to kind of mitigate that a little bit. So don't worry about the exposure. That will be there. It's literally scouts' jobs to find talented players. So just get as good as you can, and that would be my advice. But we definitely are pricing kids out of this event because there were pretty hefty team fees and stuff.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's lighten the mood a little bit after that kind of sobering thought.
Yeah, geez.
How many people mistook you for a player at this event? Because you are a young-looking man, that's for sure.
I'm a young-looking dude, and it doesn't help that I honestly kind of still look and act like a high school baseball player at times. So during, I got asked if I was a player. Usually I got asked if I was a pitcher, because I'm still kind of lanky, even at 24 years old. 10 times. Probably the best one was a parent who asked me if I was a PO, a pitcher only, who was hurt because they had seen me in the dugout every game but hadn't seen me on the field yet.
I love how observant they are of you, though. That's pretty, like, they actually spend some time watching you.
Which almost, they must have sounded like, what is he doing?
Right, which yeah. It might be understandable, yeah.
Yeah, so it was, even some of the players, because, you know, we had kids who hadn't played together before, and, like, oh, you're coaching us? Oh, cool, I was waiting to see, you know, what game you were going to get on the hill and throw. Oh, man, it was tough.
You're like, I'm 7 years older than you, dude, no problem. Nice.
Yeah.
Did you have any good celebrity run-ins down there?
So, our first night game, we had, you know, you'll see Perfect Game. I sent out the photos of all kind of the game, the big time games that have just golf carts on golf carts, just kind of stacked up. Our first night there, we had kind of set our pitching rotation to throw our best guys against the best team in our pool, a team called the Brave Scout Team / Ohio Warhawks. So this game, we probably had about 300 scouts crammed in behind home plate. You know, on golf cars, kind of in a big kind of tower behind home plate. It was probably, coaches would love it. It was probably an intimidating scene for the players.
I was going to say, absolutely. You look behind home plate as a pitcher, and you see all those golf carts and guys. Yeah.
Mm. So the coach for the other team was none other than Fred McGriff.
Wow. Okay.
So, and Freddie has, you know, a big league smile. Oven mitts for hands and still wears the hat like the same way he rocked the Tommy Mansky video.
I was going to say, it did he get any mention of Tommy Mansky? Was anybody heckling him about it?
No, not that we knew of, but while he was coaching third base, he had on like the BP top, which, okay, that happens, but then he had on wristbands, and he had on batting gloves in his back pocket that weren't a player's because he started the game. With them in his back pocket.
So literally, he's ready to go.
He was ready to tee off on these poor high school kids.
I love the fact that 50-year-old Fred McGriff is still just itching to play, dying for an at-bat.
At that game, it was just unreal. The first three pitchers that the other team ran out were between 92 and 94 miles an hour.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Mm. So, did you get a chance to talk to McGriff?
I did not. During the game, McGriff had a couple, I don't want to say bad coaching decisions, but just some interesting ones. So they have a kid throwing. We somehow got a kid to third base. They were up there. The Braves team was up 1-0, and somehow got a guy at third base with two outs. And we have this have a left-handed hitter come up to the plate. We haven't pulled a ball foul all game. Like, we have just not gotten around. We had one kid hit a double to center. But for whatever reason, I don't know if this is Freddie's call or the team's, but they threw on the big overshift.
Okay.
And our batter just took a routine ground ball to shortstop to get to the outfield because there's nobody there. And the score ended up being 1-1.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah, and so that night, you know, the coaches were going out to eat. We were sitting and talking, like, yeah, I can't believe, you know, that this is a really interesting call. You know, it was blah, blah, blah. And we turn around, and we didn't notice it because we had changed clothes, but Fred Griff was sitting at the table behind us.
Awkward.
Yes, so had to reciprocate a little bit and chat him up, but the night finished with our head coach asking Freddie if, and go to call him Freddie now because, you know, got to shake his hands over on first name basis. But he walked over there as we're leaving. He's like, "Now, Freddie, I don't know if your Thanksgiving plans are set in stone, but, you know, my family would love to have you have an addition to our table."
Oh, wow. Mic drop. Just leave at that moment. Yep.
But, I mean, a lot of these teams had coaches like that. Mookie Betts was coaching a team called the Doolin Dodgers. So you had a lot of like former first-rounders coming out and hanging out with their teams. The pitching coach who was with us, Matt Blake, who is awesome, had worked with Tyler Beattie before.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He was hanging out with us for a couple for some of the games. So it was just, you know, everybody when they was there. Naturally, the first scout I bumped into in the concession line just went and get some food was Jason Parks. So.
Of course.
Yes.
Professor Parks. How is Professor?
He was good. He was saying he was trying to get over his professional sadness.
Yeah.
Has he had
to cut his hair yet?
No, I mean, he's still, you know, he's still Jason. I don't think anybody is ever going to stop that.
Well, I wonder how Bath Night went after the Cubs won, got to the NLCS anyways.
So. That was a Bath Night of tears.
Give me a couple of names of players that really stood out to you for the week.
Players that stood out, let me think. I mean, just pitchers were ridiculous. Go look at the velocity charts. Good guys, you know, 94 miles an hour at 17 years old. Good pitchers who were like 6'11 on different teams. Team we played had a kid, Josh Lowe, who is going to have to make the choice of whether he wants to be, you know, some power hit, you know, a guy with a serious bat. Some crazy athleticism, or he wants to hop on the mound and just blow smoke by people. He was impressive. Probably my favorite hitter there. Got to be Carlos Cortez of the Orlando Scorpions.
What a beautiful swing on that kid. Oh, my gosh.
This kid, yeah, is, you know, 5'10". But probably the favorite thing I saw about him wasn't even something in the game, but walking by, and he was walking in the field, and he had, you know, everybody now has the backpacks, right? So you could see his bat was totally clean, except for, like, you know, a 2-inch kind of area around the barrel, you know, where everything was just, like, smudged there, because he does not miss the barrel.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So he's, like, worn out a 2-inch little gap on the barrel of his bat.
Yeah, that's where he hits everything.
Wow. Where do you think, did you see him play defense at all? Where do you think he ends up as a defender?
That's going to be the tough part. I know he caught I believe he caught a little bit later in the tournament. This is a guy that I don't worry about where he plays. Get the bat in the lineup. I do not care that he's 5'8". You know, I care more that he hasn't not hit the barrel in like 2 years.
Yeah, for those that are listening to this, I believe he's a Miami commit. I could have that wrong. He played in the
AFLAC. He's a University of South Carolina guy.
That's right. Pardon me, and I knew that. I wrote him up on my site a couple of weeks ago. He played in the AFLAC game or one of the All-Star games a couple of weeks ago, either that or the Under Armour game. Beautiful left-handed swing, probably one of the top-hitting prospects in this upcoming draft.
And is also ambidextrous.
Correct, and that was the other part. He plays the infield as a right-hander, and then he plays the outfield as a lefty.
Yes, it's pretty crazy. One of the coolest things I saw, another great hitting coach, Matt Pierce, the guy down in Houston. He has a very talented young man kind of come up through their system. His name is Cole Turney. He won't be drafted from the draft until 2017. I saw a couple of bats of his in the first couple. I just saw some ground outs. I'm always the guy. So dude's 8-for-10. I'm seeing the two infield flies he has.
Life is a scout.
Right, so finally I saw Turney, and this is a kid, very fast left-handed outfielder, he's already getting some serious strength on him, runs very well, puts a charge in the ball. So when I finally saw him get into one, he hit the ground rule double, which is impressive in and of itself. He was at second base nearly when that ball landed on the first hop.
Wow.
Yeah, he can move.
Mm. A couple other names I'd love to ask you about. Did you get to see any of the local kids in our area from Northern Virginia, either Khalil Lee or Joe Rizzo?
Joe Rizzo was a guy that I did not get to see, but he was somebody who I couldn't get people to shut up about.
Really?
They just loved the bat. And they had seen some serious... I believe it was one of our assistant coaches with the NEB teams, and they saw Rizzo put one like 440 against them.
Oof.
So yeah, he was a guy who you would go into conversations talking about somebody else, and then he would come up.
Mm, interesting. I'm looking forward to watching him next spring. Okay, very cool. What about Carter Kaiboom? I believe he's kind of from your former area in South Carolina. Did you get to see him?
All right, say that name one more time.
Carter Kaiboom.
Kibun. We actually played him in the first game, or in the second game, that big night game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I like. He's definitely. You can tell that because he's played a lot of high level baseball. Just was not, thrown off by the pressure at all. He was a guy who, again, I think he had done some big damage against the NEB team in the past. When we played him, again, bat speed's obvious. What it looked like to me, though, and again, this is just sort of a young hitter. I remember watching the summer, he was a guy who had a little bit wider of a stance. And we kept batting now. He also had kind of the Evan Longoria look.
Mm.
Real upright. And I mean, the moves and the swing are still there. But, we didn't see him get into one. I know he hit a couple hard later in the tournament, so maybe it was just that first day of kind of feeling the swing out.
Right.
But he's also, I think he's got a brother in the Nat system, correct?
Yeah, Spencer. That's why I always kind of keep an eye on him, because they're such different players, even though they're family members.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes, because, this is a guy who I think, if he ends up going to college, comes out, assuming trajectory stays the same for development, easy, very high round guy. This year, does he get into the first round? Does it go lower? Really, you're going to have to just see how the positionally where it plays out. But just in terms of bat to ball skills and how the swing works, I do like the bat.
Yeah, I think the team that believes he's a long term third baseman might pop him early, like you say.
Yeah, and it's just again comes down to do you think. Yeah, do you think the bats will stay? Do you think it's going to be worth the jump and get him? Because, I don't think he's going to have the crazy physical tools like a teammate of Josh Lowe. But
right.
baseball, baseball fielder are definitely more advanced than most players his age.
All right. Anything else that you want to mention about the tournament?
If you're a kid and you get a chance to go there, go there. If you're a coach or just someone interested in baseball, go there because everyone in the world is there. You see random people that you wouldn't expect to be there. Preller's down there, right? You know, you got GMs down there. You got scouting director. I bumped into Tapia's agent down there.
your buddy, Ramel Tapia.
Yeah, I mean, even on that end, one of my buddies growing up was Dick Johansson, who was the second round Stanley Cup pick for you guys. Like
yeah,
2 years ago?
Absolutely. Yeah, he played for Potomac this season. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, me and Jake played together for about 3-4 years, just passed through high school and stuff, and he had just moved down there to work with, to get some off-season work in at a place down there, and he bumped into me at the field. He was down there just going to kind of check in with his agent.
Hmm.
So it's just, the whole world is down there.
Well, you know I got to ask, you have a good Jake Johansson story?
I got plenty of Jake Johansson stories
that you can share. Let me start with that. Let me put that caveat in there.
That I can share. So I'll go with one. I'll go with a newer one. So Jake's a kid who growing up was, always a kid who's bigger than everybody. A little bit, I don't say uncoordinated, but not a kid you put on your team in a relay race.
Right. Right.
What I will say about Jake is he has worked his butt off. This is a guy who he'll find a way to be successful for the Nats organization. One of the things that really struck me is I had a pitcher on our team who was just kind of a baseball rat like me, and he was kind of following me around to the game. And Jake shows up, and all of a sudden I look over, and these two guys are like breaking down pitching, going into just kind of the off-season plan, just the diet, the training, the rehab, the prehab, stretching routines, everything. So this is a kid, is he physically talented? Obviously, can drop hundos on the mound. But he's taking, he's taking ownership of his craft, which is what you really like to see with minor league guys. Instead of just, it's the off season, I'm just going to go, rest, golf, fish, hunt, whatever.
Yeah, he's been one of those guys. You just keep waiting for the light for everything to click because you see the physical talent, and you just know at some point it's going to click, but it just, one day it does, one day it doesn't kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, if I can transition a little bit, I did want to ask you about a couple of Nats hitters. I think everybody would strangle me if I didn't ask you about your thoughts on Bryce Harper after his breakout season. I think the last time I talked to you and had you on, we were in the midst of his 3-home-run day in May. So,
yes.
And from there, he basically didn't really slow down. Hit, I don't know how many home runs that he hit this year, but very close to winning the Triple Crown. Probably is going to be the NL MVP. What did you see from Harper this year?
Harper finally, I think the approach, obviously, it didn't come out of nowhere, but it's not. I think it's the guy who he went and he wanted to have a good approach. It's not that that just happened. Swing wise, he's finally learning to kind of harness that swing where it's not just kind of, especially the lower body before with that kind of huge back foot movement forward. He's learned to kind of incorporate that into his swing. And he just took off this year. And honestly, I'm not saying anything Nats fans don't know. But there's some things in his, what he can do with the bat that are beyond special. So, only bad thing for Nats is when he hits arbitration. It's going to cost them oodles and oodles of money.
Well, let me ask a little different question. What does he do now to try to get better with his swing? How does he improve on what is, one of the best 25 offensive seasons probably in the last 100 years?
Man, that's tough. And one of the things with guys who have just huge dynamic swings like that is just staying flexible in the off season. I think, was it last year or the year before, when he talked about how he added all this weight and got real strong.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the keys to that will be just, you know, to keep mobility, to keep flexibility. His swing is almost, you know, parallel to like Tim Lincecum's pitching mechanics back in the day.
Mm.
You know, Lincecum used, you know, had the kind of unorthodox delivery where everything was just firing at 110 miles an hour. And then kind of as, you know, age caught up with them, you start to lose that flexibility and, you know, the ability to generate force.
Hmm. Interesting.
So Bryce obviously, you know, much, you know, suit, you know, way younger, different setup, but that'll be, you know, the key for him is to stay flexible, you know, learn not to just try and, you know, grip the bat to sawdust and just muscle up on everything. You know, I don't, if, you know, Bryce Harper walking into a cage, I would just say, all right, where do you want me to throw BP? You
know,
not a ton I'm going to work on with that dude.
Just keeping him loose and keeping his rhythm as much as anything.
Yeah, and again, he got a little better rhythm this year. He got in a better position. Look at him kind of with his hips and kind of shoulders this year. He started a little more kind of hunched over to play, where before he'd start kind of upright and kind of get into that position.
Mm-hmm.
Where this year he started a little more bent over and added a little kind of flow with his barrel, where it kind of tilted towards the pitcher and then get into his swing. Just as a way to kind of stay loose and keep that bat whipping rather than trying to push it to the zone.
Hmm, interesting. If I could, I would like to ask you a little bit about Danny Espinosa. I don't know how much you watched of him this year, but you were nice enough to do an article sometime last winter on my site about the difficulties of transitioning from a switch hitter to a full-time, you know, one-sided hitter. And then everything kind of went out the window. Just kind of your general thoughts on Espinosa, that decision, and just kind of give you the floor on him.
That one honestly surprised me, because I thought it would go, if it started to go bad with him just hitting from one side, it would go even worse if he tried to then switch back to being a switch hitter. But he found, whatever he did to kind of capture that, what I would say, just again, stick with the switch hitter idea. Again, I don't know how he was able. I'm honestly floored that he was able to pull that off.
And not that he was outstanding, but he was certainly a major league hitter from the left side as well. And he didn't take one rep in spring training or anything. It was amazing, frankly.
Exactly, and I mean, maybe it was just, you know, simple as he wasn't worrying about, you know, trying to hit from both sides. So then when they gave him the shot, he's like, yeah, why not?
You know. That's interesting. But sometimes you're right. When you take the pressure off yourself, sometimes you just go and perform.
Yeah, and I wish I had seen, you know, something in the swing, but that's the guy I've yet to kind of seriously dive into on that issue. And that's almost one where you'd have to talk with the player and just kind of get their process behind it.
Hmm. That's a great point. That's a great insight.
Yeah.
So, all right, final question. Who's winning the World Series, Kansas City or the Mets? As I'm talking to you now, it's 1-0 Kansas City.
I've got to go with Kansas City. Eventually, there'll be a game or two that gets ugly, and I want that bullpen when things start to get hectic.
Mm. That's a good call. Yeah, I think I'm sticking with the Royals too, but I haven't believed in the Mets all year, so I'm sticking with just not believing in them. So.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, I want to thank you for coming on again and rejoining the show. Love to give you a spot here for your plugs where people can find you on Twitter, Facebook, where they can come hit with you and all the good stuff.
So find me on Twitter at RA_Parker. If you want to come hit, like I said, come down to Collin County Baseball Academy down here in Prosper, Texas. Beyond that, yeah, hope to be back on the show again. Hope y'all can tolerate me
and
my ramblings about hitting and, you know, good old Fred McGriff and baseball in general.
And definitely check out your work at Baseball Prospectus as well. Definitely one of my Going Yard, I believe, is the name of the column, and it's definitely a must read every time you put out something.
You are better at plugging my stuff than I am. I appreciate that.
Well, that's funny. You're better at teaching the swing than I am, so we've got our strengths.
There you go.
But in all seriousness, standing invitation, anytime you want to come on, I always appreciate talking hitting and picking your brain about the swing.
All right, man, not a problem at all.
And that was episode 52 of the Nats GM Show with Ryan Parker, my hitting guru and the man I know as Hitting Ninja. So I want to thank him for coming on the show. It was a lot of fun hearing about the World Wood Bat that just happened a couple days ago, and what a baseball spectacle, frankly, that's become. So thanks to Ryan for coming on. Definitely check him out on Twitter, at @RA_Parker. I am Ryan Sullivan, at NatsGM.com on Twitter. Saying this show is over for the week. Bye for now.